This is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. In the last year during the pandemic, the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services has seen an increase in the number of children in the foster care system, and more foster care parents are needed to help provide safe and caring homes. Joining us today to talk about how the foster care system has been affected by the pandemic in the last year is Libby Moeller. She's a program development associate at Illinois CASA, that stands for Court-Appointed Special Advocates. Libby, welcome to The 21st.
Good morning. How are you? Thank you for having me.
I'm well. Thank you for being here. Also joining us today is Karina Hohenschel. She's a foster parent, trainer, and TA provider for Be Strong Families. Karina, thank you for being here.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
And Leda Garcia-Greenwald is the president of the Illinois Chapter of Foster Care Alumni of America. Leda, thank you for joining us today as well.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Listeners, we want to invite you to join our conversation. As always, 800-222-9455 is the number. Do you have any experience with the foster care system in Illinois? We want to hear from you. 800-222-9455. Maybe you fostered a child. What drove you to take that step? And what would you change about the system? 800-222-9455 is the number. Libby, I want to begin with you. The Department of Children and Family Services has reportedly seen an increase of more than 2,000 children entering care in the past year. As of yesterday, May 31st, DCFS reported 21,437 youth in care. What are some of the reasons for more children entering the system in this past year?
Well, I believe by and large, it has been because of COVID, and children have not been around mandated reporters to the level that they have been, you know, before COVID hit us, with kids learning online and not being in the presence of teachers and school administrators. We saw, you know, you saw that drop, and then you see that swing back, and the numbers and the reports increase dramatically. They tend to increase even before COVID, when school would go back in session in August and September, and then again after the holiday break in January. So that's where I believe we're seeing that uptick.
And do you see this increase reflected in the cases that your organization, CASA, that you oversee?
Oh, absolutely, yes. Yeah. So we are, we advocate for the best interests of children in the juvenile court systems. And, you know, we do work as a team with DCFS caseworkers or the private agency caseworkers, and we all over the state have seen large numbers upticking everywhere. And it has been for definitely the past 4 to 5 months.
So, Karina, more children entering the foster care system means a need for more foster parents, especially in Southern Illinois. Can you talk about how your organization, Be Strong Families, has been dealing with this increase in need?
Absolutely. So I myself am a foster parent. So that's how I came to find out about Be Strong Families, was through our foster parent cafes. And we host parent cafes actually across the country. And so one of the things that we've been able to do is supply education and information, support, and community for people who say yes to the opportunity of fostering. And so with continued support, I don't know if you've seen the statistic, but the majority of foster parents quit after their first year. There's a lack of information and education on the amount of trauma and stress that is involved. And so when we're able to provide a community and when we're able to provide an education and support system, we can help lengthen the time that foster parents can say yes, as well as continue to keep those families or those kids in their care rather than give notice.
And Leda, I want to bring you into the conversation. According to Children's Home and Aid, we read that Illinois has the third highest rate of young adults emancipating or aging out of foster care in the country. Can you talk about how people aging out of the system were affected by the pandemic in this past year?
Absolutely. That was actually one of our largest concerns once COVID had hit, was how do we best support this, you know, this population that is really coming to terms with their own adulthood and don't have the resources available to them, like most youth, you know, most of their peers do. They don't have a traditional family to go to or mentors and things like that. So we did work really, really hard, the Illinois chapter, with other stakeholders, other organizations, and how can we best support these youth while they're not only turning 18 and being in that transitional age youth population, but really turning 21 and exiting the system. And so some of the things that we identified was lack of educational supports. Initially, when COVID had hit, a lot of the youth, when their school programs had gone virtual, they didn't have the technology to be able to do that. Again, we saw a lot of housing concerns with a lot of foster parents saying, they may have a teen who likes to go out and see their friends and not necessarily respect the stay-at-home order, and we no longer want this teen in our home. So we did see a lot of that happening. Ultimately, what ended up happening was we advocated very strongly, again, with other organizations to have increased supports. And what that now looks like is there are additional resources to youth who are turning 21 mm-hmm. or have already turned 21 during this time. And I believe that those are in place until September. So some of those look like extended services, despite the fact that they're already 21, possibly re-entry to come back into the system. There was an increase in CAFE funding, which helps with education and training vouchers,
sure,
housing supports and things like that.
All right, we're gonna continue this conversation after a short break, talking about an increase in children in the foster care system in Illinois in the pandemic. You're listening to The 21st. Stay with us. This is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. If you're just tuning in, we're talking about how Illinois' foster care system was affected by the pandemic in the past year, as well as some new legislation that's been introduced to address the foster care system. We're speaking with Libby Moeller. She's Program Development Associate at CASA, which stands for Court Appointed Special Advocates. Also, Karina Hohenschel. She's a foster parent trainer and technical assistant provider for Be Strong Families. I might have that acronym wrong. We can clarify that. And Leda Garcia Greenwell is president of the Illinois chapter of Foster Care Alumni of America. Listeners, we want to hear from you. 800-222-9455 is the number if you have any experience with the foster care system in Illinois from any perspective. 800-222-9455. 800-222-9455. We did ask our texting group about the foster care system in Illinois. We received a response from Justin in Rockford, who said, "The child I fostered clearly needed psychiatric care, and I struggled to get him approved for therapy, then find a therapist who accepted Medicaid, who was also approved by the state. I was not allowed to simply pay a therapist on behalf of the child. It took several months and hours on the phone and ultimately some arm twisting of the caseworker before I could get the child an appointment with a therapist. Within a week, the therapist had the child committed to the hospital voluntarily, and he was then institutionalized." Justin, I want to thank you for sharing that with us. Libby, are there special accommodations made for foster kids who have special needs like that, or who've become fosters because of a domestic violence or drug issue or something?
Well, there is, but we know by and large the system is very much overwhelmed, and there's not enough funding. There's not enough medical providers for the physical and mental well-being of the population that we're seeing. So that what your texter responded with is, that is something that we do see a lot. That is something that we, I think, across the entire state are starting to work together more in a cohesive, collaborative way to scale those issues. And I think that we are finding, we are making definite improvements in terms of medical advocacy and educational advocacy, as your listener has experienced.
Libby, I also want to ask you, in 2018, the Family First Prevention Services Act was enacted. This is a federal law. It gave states until this October 2021, to put through child welfare changes to their systems. Illinois is planning to make those changes in September. Can you talk about what the Family First Prevention Services Act is and what people can expect, what sort of changes are coming to the foster care system in Illinois?
So Family First will be rolling out, like you said, shortly here in Illinois. I believe that we're test piloting, it will be test piloted across the state before it actually goes in full force. is my understanding. I don't know if Karina or Leda know more to that, but that's my understanding, is that it'll be test piloted in 3 to 4 areas in Illinois before it goes across the state. But it's about prioritizing family, the biological family in the child's life, and making greater effort to make those connections of kin. June is reunification month. It's something that we do discuss more often about. Foster care tends to quickly go into a conversation of adoption, and reunification is a very important conversation. And that family first really lends itself to undergirding the importance of that kinship and reunification.
Karina, do you want to add anything to that? I mean, as somebody who has been a foster parent yourself, do you see enough emphasis on reunification, or how do you think about that?
I am in a city of about 40,000 people. I'm in Quincy. And so I'm considered like central Illinois. And we have, at last count, 245 cases open in my county. And my husband and I have had 14 kids in 4 years. We have reunified some of them, and others have moved on to adoption. And so recognizing that our role, our stance as foster parents, is we support reunification until we can't. So we do everything we can, in my experience, I do shared parenting. So that's, having open communication with the parents as much as possible, medical appointments, school appointments, things that are happening. How do we discipline? How do we have conversations about emotional things? What's their favorite bedtime routine, favorite food? What's their birthday traditions? How do we keep that conversation open so that way the transition back home can be smooth? It works more keeping both the parents and the children more emotionally stable through this really tumultuous, traumatic time. And so I found that it works best when we can do that. There are times when it doesn't flow both ways. And so I do understand that. But in my case, I grew up in a children's home in Ohio, and I had 5 foster sisters growing up. And so for me, I can't imagine my life without my sisters. And so they've influenced me a lot on this decision. And recognizing the power of family, the connections they have, the benefits of being in a healthy, stable family. And I know when I can better support my kids' parents, my community is better, their family is stronger. And overall, we're a better community when we can work together to do that, to better ourselves.
There's a couple other, that's pretty big sweeping federal legislation that passed a few years ago. We've been talking earlier in the show today about the Illinois General Assembly. There were a couple of bills that passed here in Illinois, less sweeping, but still important issues. One would require the state to make sure that youth in care fill out state and federal college aid forms when they're coming to the end of their high school terms. And there was also a bill called it's informally known as the duffel bag bill, which would put an end to this practice of handing children a garbage bag in which to store their belongings as they move within the system, and instead giving them a duffel bag or a tote. Karina, is this a widespread issue? I'm curious. I mean, are children often arriving at the homes of their foster parents with all their belongings in a trash bag?
To be honest, I would like them to have anything when they come to me. Yeah. A lot of times my kids literally get nothing. I pick them up at the hospital, or they are brought to me from a caseworker, and they don't have time to get things. And so that's, again, working with the family so you can find out, or sometimes they'll come from families who have little to nothing. And so recognizing that, my husband and I always buy totes. They're waterproof. They're easy to move, and they stack really well. And so we also usually make it a birthday gift or a Christmas gift to buy a suitcase set. So that way, initially, they do have something. There are several agencies around. We have one here in Quincy that supports foster families. And one thing that they do is they load up like an overnight bag, and they drop it off to us as soon as we get a placement with the toiletries. Again, like that small overnight bag, a couple change of clothes, clean underwear, deodorant, feminine products, whatever they would need for that age group. We received a baby early on, and so recognizing we needed like newborn stuff. So they're like, here's, loaded up this bag with this. So recognizing it's age appropriate, it's gender appropriate, doing what they can. So that way when the kids arrive, we can sort through it. But more often than not, we don't even get get a trash bag. And so when we move them on, whether it's back home or whether it's onto the next phase of their life, we do what we can to send them off with something, like I said, with totes or suitcase set or something that makes it more respectable and more empowered to continue on and hold their belongings.
If you're just tuning in, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about the Illinois foster care system. During the pandemic, it's seen an increase reportedly of more than 2,000 children additional beyond what might have been previously entering the system. DCFS has reported 21,437 youth in care as of yesterday, May 31st. We're speaking with Karina Hohenschel, a foster parent and trainer and provider for Be Strong Families, Libby Moeller, who's Program Development Associate at CASA, Court-Appointed Special Advocates, and Leda Garcia-Greenwald, who's the president of the Illinois Chapter of Foster Care Alumni of America. And Leda, I want to ask you, we came across a stat that 30% of Illinois foster youth graduate, only 30% of foster youth in Illinois graduate from high school. There was legislation passed last week. It would require each school board to have an employee designated to sort of work with DCFS in terms of student records. I wonder if you can just maybe talk generally about the challenges of attending school while in foster care.
Absolutely. So this legislation, like you had mentioned, is not something new. It's not revolutionary. We see other states also have very similar legislation. I know Texas, for example, does this really well in having a point person. I personally have spent time in the Illinois foster care system from the time that I was 12 till I was adopted at 19. And that was one of my biggest challenges. I grew up loving to go to schools. That was like my safe place, my favorite place to be for sure. But I, until the time that I was a sophomore in high school, I had already attended 12 schools. That constitutes some multiple changes in school in one school year. For me, it was three different schools in ninth grade, again in sixth grade, and things of that nature. When you're shuffling around schools this often, not only are you just losing a lot of stability, your friends, and things like that, but it's also estimated that you lose about 4 to 6 months of academic progress with each move. So having a point person can definitely help alleviate some of that. I know one of my challenges when I had switched schools coming into care was that it took so long to get my academic records from my previous school. So that's something that this point person could definitely help with, getting the necessary medical information. And it's little things like that that normally a parent would take care of for sure, but things that kind of just aren't thought about on the forefront that really cause some of those delays and make those the decrease in academic progress even larger.
We only have a few minutes left in our conversation. Karina, people who are listening to this may be thinking about becoming a foster parent, right? It's a choice that there's a lot of factors people should consider. Can you talk about what things people should keep in mind before making that leap?
Sure. It's not what you expect. that's one thing that I've learned. Like I said, I've been doing this for 4 years, and I think a couple reasons that I'm still in it stem from those five protective factors that we teach at Be Strong Families, you know, those things that fight risk factors. And those are, you know, having those strong connections. So I have a community of people who are also foster parents. Why? Because nobody else gets what we do and goes through what we go through. And so to have people you can relate to, you can have authentic, vulnerable, transparent conversation with, those are the people you need to support you. Also, being able to recognize, we tapped into this a little bit earlier, was being able to find those concrete supports. And those are, the medical, you know, being able to, the financial, all of those levels of, you know, the IEP and how are we supporting our kid in school and all of those levels. And so being able to set those up successfully, having those circles around you, knowing who to call, when to call, how to call, being a bulldog with advocacy. I fight for my kids. That's my job. And so recognizing when we do that, we're better off as foster parents, and we also can be more successful ourselves. And I know that the other thing that I have to remind every day is it's not about me. And when I make it about me, I usually trip and fall and I'm quickly reminded. And so I recognize that when I make it about the kids and where we are as a family unit, as we stand, you know, every season it changes and every child it changes. But when we're able to focus on them and what they need, I'm better for it. And recognizing to humble myself, to put myself in those positions, to ask, to make them more comfortable, to be able to help support them and help them grow, because ultimately they're the ones who have experienced an excessive amount of trauma and currently are. And so living with strangers isn't fun, isn't comfortable, isn't normal. And so we have to take that into consideration. And so just keep an open heart and an open mind, and fill your circle with people who can support you, because things will get really tough, and things will be really great and rewarding in the end as well.
Karina Hohenschel is a foster parent and trainer with Be Strong Families. We've also been speaking with Leda Garcia Greenwald, president of Foster Care Alumni of America's Illinois chapter, and Libby Moeller, who is with Illinois CASA, court-appointed special advocates. Libby, Karina, Leda, thank you so much for being with us for this important conversation today on the 21st.
Absolutely. Thank you for making
thank
time.
Thank you.
That is all the time we have for our program today. The 21st is produced by Anna Casey and Ryan Wild. Chantal Vaca is our engagement producer. Our interns are Zainab Qureshi and Briel Skullark. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. Thanks to the band Public Access for our theme music. I want to remind you to go to our website, 21stshow.org, where you can subscribe to our podcast. We're also on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and NPR One. Just search for The 21st, which is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.